This hour of the Jason Rancho brought to you by Farrah.com. There's a lot of news happening all around the world. And right here at home, it's time to find out what's trending.
What's trending in Seattle?
The port of Seattle is expecting a little over 1 million visitors coming to the city during the cruise season that just started. And that means there's going to be a lot more foot traffic. There's going to be a lot more Uber and Lyft traffic in a city that's already pretty busy. But of course, this is good for business, right? Bob Donegan is the president of Ivor Seafood Restaurant. He tells King 5 he's expecting a whole bunch more customers at his location on the pier.
It's tax day, but we think of it as Sunday and cruise day here on the Seattle waterfront. It's more visitors than T-Mobile, CenturyLink, Husky Stadium, and Cheney Stadium combined.
Hey, look at that. He remembered to say T-Mobile and not Safeco. He continued to say local business owners are going to be pretty busy.
The second busiest week the free waterfront shuttle has ever had was last week. Busier than Christmas, busier than most of last summer. So it's growing rapidly. They are astonished at the number of people in the downtown, not just on the waterfront, who are living on the streets. It's a big concern for them.
Okay. You're going to have a whole bunch of people, some of whom have never visited Seattle. They're going to step off of that boat. They're going to get on to the pier. They're going to start exploring the city of Seattle and what's going to be right in front of them. Out of control homelessness, trash that's being piled up, needles that are everywhere, human waste on street corners. You can see it. You can smell it. That's what these visitors are going to experience. That is going to be the first impression of Seattle, because that's what Seattle has become under a steady bit of progressive leadership who have no clue what to do on these problems. And there are some significant economic implications, because right now King 5 says the Port of Seattle estimates that cruise businesses create about $900 million in local revenue. That's a lot of dollar. That's a ton of money. That's money they otherwise wouldn't see, because these are people who don't generally visit Seattle. They're just here because they're on a stop as part of a cruise. Understand that that money is being threatened by inaction on homelessness. That money's being threatened. I mean, part of the reason why I'm a big believer in the investments, it's expensive, but the investments of the port in Tacoma, is so they can handle some of these cruise ships. Because the truth is, going to downtown Tacoma, a hell of a lot nicer than going to downtown Seattle. This is embarrassing, but I bring this up because we have to understand the implications of a policy that is so lame and lazy, coming from Mayor Jenny Durkan and the Seattle City Council. Think about your own actions if you were to go into a city for the first time and the first thing that you saw when you stepped into that city was a tent. And then another tent. And then a row of people who are so high out of their mind, they can't even stand up straight. They're falling over. Imagine on your way to enjoy Pike Place Market, you have to step around a homeless guy passed out in the middle of the street, or a used needle, or literal human waste. Think about that. Are you going to return to that city? No. Hell, I might not even give any other city in the general region a shot again. It's one thing to say about going to L.A. and it's like, oh, this is bad. I'll go to San Diego because they're so far apart. Understand that this is someone who's going to come to Seattle and say, ugh, well, you can always go to Bellevue. I don't want to go to Bellevue. Seattle's awful. I'm not going to go to Bellevue. I'm not going to go to Tacoma. I'm not going to go to Everett. So let this cruise season be a reminder that we have a serious problem on the streets that is not yet being addressed. Let's find out what else is trending.
What's trending at home?
So I don't want to spend too much time on this, because to me, this is not a huge deal. I'm not this big environmentalist, although I do deeply care about the environment. I just don't really care about trees all that much. But I got this story from MyNorthwest.com, and they say a sound transit project slated to kick off in late April is going to clear out upwards of 5,300 trees between Northgate and Linwood. They're going to do this to make room for light rail construction. They're going to be removing these trees and installing train tracks. Now, they say the project is part of the Linwood Link light rail extension that's 8.5 miles adjacent to I-5. Eventually, it's going to expand light rail into Snohomish County. It's going to go into Shoreline and Linwood and Mount Lake Terrace. Okay. Here's the funny thing about the story, and the only thing I thought about when I saw this story. There are people all across the state of Washington who have property. They own the property. Sometimes we're talking about homes, other times we're talking about businesses, but they own the property. They want to take down a tree. They're going to be stuck in paperwork for weeks, if not months, just to take down one tree. They make a huge deal about taking down one tree, and they force you to get stuck in a bureaucratic trap to cut down one tree on your own property. And yet it seems like to get rid of 5,300 trees, not that big of a deal. Whatever, take them down. Now, to be fair to Sound Transit, they say that they plan to plant about four times as many trees as they remove. So they're going to put 7,500 trees in Mount Lake Terrace up. They're going to plant 20,000 total trees along this 8.5-mile stretch of construction. Kudos. The new trees will stand around 3 feet tall. I just want to know, how about when I want to take down a tree on my own property, why can't I just do that very simply? Why can't I just go online, just do some form, says, I promise to do this, and then they go check? No, because they know that they can take more and more money from you. They pretend they care about the environment, but they don't give you the opportunity to very quickly go through this the way that they're doing it with Sound Transit. Everything about this is a scam to me, and it drives me absolutely mad, as does my next story. Let's find out what else is trending.
What's trending? Wait, what?
So Mayor Pete Buttigieg was on Rachel Maddow's show yesterday, and he's on the same talking point that the other Democrats are on, saying, we need to get rid of the Electoral College. This is a group of Democrats who don't care about the Constitution. They don't care about the rule of law. They don't care about tradition. They care about making it easier for them to win elections. They understand that it's harder to win an election when we have the Electoral College because it forces people like Pete Buttigieg and others to go to states they really don't care about. They don't care about Kansas. They don't care about Oklahoma. They don't care about Rhode Island. They don't care about Wyoming. They generally don't care about middle America or middle Americans because they don't understand middle America or middle Americans. And let's be clear, when we're talking about a state like Washington, they don't care about Spokane. They don't care about Vancouver or Bellingham or the Tri-Cities. They don't care about Redmond. They don't care about Olympia and Milton, the gem of Pierce County. They care about Seattle and Bellevue because that's where they can get money, and that's where a lot of the people live. And so Pete Buttigieg says, oh, the Republicans, they're screwing things around because they're trying to keep the Electoral College.
I think that if they try tinkering with the system, again, they're already doing it under the table in so many ways. But if they try doing it more nakedly, they're going to encounter resistance because most Americans don't want this. Most Americans don't want the conservative agenda that we're now seeing, the extreme agenda that we're seeing in Washington. In fact, it is precisely for that reason that they have to interfere with democracy with things like voter suppression or clinging on an electoral college that overrules the will of the American people. It is precisely because the American people, by and large, don't want what they're selling, that they are relying on manipulations of our political structure in order to keep their agenda in play.
This line always fascinates me because he's essentially saying that Republicans cheat. They're cheating the system. They're keeping people from voting. There's no actual evidence of that happening in any significant way. People are going behind the scenes. They're working with, what was the name of the ballot box, Diebold Company, whatever it was during the Bush campaign the first time around. This whole idea, that a Republican owns the ballot box company. You've got all of these things that they like to throw out there. And yet I always have just a simple question that I never seem to get an answer on from people like Pete Buttigieg or others. If Republicans only win elections when they cheat, why don't we cheat all the time? Why do we right now not have total control of the House and the Senate? Why do we not have veto-proof control in the House and the Senate? Can someone answer that question? We're cheating all the time. That's the only way that we win elections. We cheat. Why are we so bad at it? Are we bad at cheating? Are you just extra good at winning, Democratic Party? Every time they lose, they don't turn to themselves and say, man, you know what, we probably could have done better in that election had we, visited Wisconsin. Maybe we shouldn't go to the far fringes and maybe we'd start winning more. I don't understand it. If we're cheating, can we not cheat a little bit better? I don't know who's out there who's pulling all the cheating levers. Could you help here in Seattle and get a couple? I don't even need the entire Seattle City Council. Just give me two seats. Give me two seats. Maybe make some changes in the King County Council. a change or two in Bellevue, maybe Puyallup. Let's throw in Pierce County. Can we just cheat a little bit here, or is that off the books or off the table? We're not doing that?
Well, like how he says, we're tinkering with things.
Tinkering.
But by keeping the Electoral College, it's been around forever.
Yeah, tinkering. I like the Electoral College. We should all like the Electoral College because I don't want this presidency to be determined by five or six states when that president is supposed to represent the entire country. If we need to force them to go into cities or states that are Republican-controlled or rural, so be it. I'm okay with that. You should be in Idaho. You should be visiting New Mexico. You should check out North Carolina and South Dakota and North Dakota. This is absolutely ridiculous. Cheaters. 1-800-465-8770 if you want to send me a text message on the Numb Better Tax Resolution hotline. 1-800-465-8770. Let's find out what else is trending.
What's trending at home?
Officials in Spokane intend to lay off over 300 school employees, mostly teachers, because of funding issues. This is not an issue that is unique to this particular school district. It is an issue a lot of districts are having to face over all over the state of Washington. Joining me on the line to discuss is Lee Finnis. She's the director of the Center for Education at the Washington Policy Center. Lee, thank you so much for coming on.
Oh, it's a pleasure. Thank you, Jason.
So what exactly is the crux of this problem?
Well, it's a threat. This is a threat. And I'm so disappointed in watching all this happen. The crux of this is that the districts are now telling us they're going to fire teachers. When only 2 years ago, you'll remember, Jason, they asked for huge increases mm-hmm. to their budgets. And remember the McCleary lawsuit and all the talk about that for years since 2012. The state has been increasing funding to the public schools dramatically. So they asked for these increases, these huge increases. They got the huge increases. People's property taxes were increased in 2017. The state property tax was increased by the highest amount in state history to provide additional money for the schools, in addition to devoting a larger portion of the state budget to the schools. So the portion of the state budget has gone from 41% to 50.6% for public schools, and the budget has grown dramatically, as you know, over the last 10 years. Mm-hmm. And so the schools are now getting $22.8 billion. A good shorthand is that the funding has gone from $10,000 per student to $15,000 per student in a six-year period of time. It is the most stunning increase in public education funding we have ever seen. So we've given them the money, and now the districts are saying, you know, they got the increase they asked for, and now they're saying that's not enough money, that we need to remove the limit on local levies. It was placed mm-hmm. into the law in 2017 to ease the burden of the higher state property tax and to reduce the inequities in funding amongst districts. You'll recall the McCleary court ruling also said that the way we were funding the schools was unfair and inequitable because students living in wealthy districts like Seattle were getting $4,000 extra to be educated, whereas students in Kettle Falls in Eastern Washington were getting $500 per student. So this disparity was inequitable. The court said this has to be corrected, and so the state legislature put a limit on the amounts that local school districts could raise and increase the amount more than increase the state funding for the schools to make up for that limit in local levies, way more. And now the districts are saying they're in budget troubles. And what happened was,
that's what this is
fall.
About, right? I mean, at the end of the day, what this is about is a ploy to put pressure on the lawmakers to pass this bill that would give the school districts greater power in collecting property taxes. Isn't that what really this is about?
Yes. They were not satisfied with greater, the state property tax increase for schools. They're not satisfied with the $9.3 billion extra they got in the intervening 6 years since 2012, a 68% increase in state funding. They're not satisfied. And they don't like having limits placed on their ability to raise local property taxes. That's what's happened here. It is amazing. You know, we've given them what they've asked for, and they say it's not enough. They want more.
It's absolutely ridiculous. And what I love about this at the same time, because there's no doubt that regardless of the McCleary decision, we knew that there were going to be some school districts that would still have some financial problems. But a lot of it was of their own doing. I mean, I looked to Tacoma where they clearly stated, the district clearly says, we do not have the money to give you raises. And yet they got the raises anyway. And then as a result of that, they said they had to make some cuts. And then we all act shocked that the cuts were coming. But you created the cuts.
Yes. This is all foreseeable. Last fall, we were all talking about it. Here come the strikes, the threatened strikes, to get the double-digit raises. I mean, this is just such an amazing thing that happened. You know, the superintendent of public instruction gave a signal to the what happened was last in 2018, there was a surplus of $1 billion that was provided for the schools. And the union and Superintendent Reichdahl jump on that and give the signal, go for it, go for this extra money. And so a lot of these districts demanded double-digit pay increases for their staff, 24%, 30% in some districts. Have you ever gotten a 24% pay increase in 1 year?
Well, I'm worth all of the money that they give me, and so I've gotten way more than that. But I certainly am the outlier in that.
Well,
is there any indication?
It's not the normal thing, Jason.
It's certainly
not the
normal
thing.
At the most, you'll get maybe 3%. So last question for you. As you're looking at this, I mean, obviously, the Republicans don't have control in Olympia. Democrats have total control. Is there any resistance from some Democrats that are saying, whoa, 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 wait? Because I know that someone like a state senator, Guy Palumbo, Democrat from Maltby, he's actually, at least on this issue, trying to be fair to all students, you know, charter school students, not just students who go to public schools, and he pays a price for that. Is there enough political pressure being placed on some of these Democrats to say, don't go down this road?
Well, I would think there have to be some Democrats that don't want to have a challenge from a Republican saying you raised property taxes for the second time in 2 years. I would think there have to be some Democrats that don't want to be called out for raising people's property taxes. It's a very regressive form of taxation. It hits the elderly really hard.
Mm-hmm.
Young people trying to buy a house, you know, working people just trying to get by. Property taxes are very difficult, and they rise, you know, they're going up so fast that they really hurt people badly, you know. So I do think that the Democrats are in control. There clearly has to be some pushback because this effort to lift the lid on local levies has not been heard, has not been voted on by mm-hmm. either floor of the House. So it seems to be stuck. This bill to do this is stuck in both houses. There were, like you say, there were attempts to add amendments to it that would garner the Democratic votes that they needed. But even so, we still haven't seen any movement on these bills. And Palumbo, to his credit, came forward and mm-hmm. said, this is so unfair. We're going to lift the lid on local levies and not do anything for charter schools that don't get any local levy funding whatsoever. So that the disparity and inequity would get worse because charter schools, you know, anyway.
He's a good guy.
Very good.
He's a good guy. He's on the right side of this. I truly hope that this stays stuck right where it belongs. But in case it doesn't, we'll certainly be checking back with Lee Finna over at the Washington Policy Center to see what exactly is going on and the implications of this. You can check out the work that she does. She has a fantastic blog that you can read over at washingtonpolicy.org. Lee Finna from the Washington Policy Center, thank you so much for stopping by. I really appreciate it.
Oh, thank you, Jason.
Of
appreciate
course.
It myself.
You're listening to The Jason Rancher. Now it's time to find out what else is trending.
What's trending at home?
So we don't have that much time, but I wanted to give a shout out to state lawmakers, both Democrats and Republicans. They finally passed a bill that should test thousands of untested rape kits that are just sitting on shelves at crime labs and police departments across the state of Washington. The bill they just passed, and I'm 100% sure that Jay Inslee is going to sign it, gives $10 million in funding to hire additional forensic scientists, install new higher capacity equipment, and then build a new laboratory and analysis space. Washington State Patrol forensic scientist Krista Zaruba, talking to Cato TV, says they're way behind in logging these rape kits.
Washington's backlog is roughly 10,000 kits, including all of the ones that have not been submitted. Personally, it's incredibly important. So we've got this onrush of kits that we have to try and keep up with.
They absolutely do. The only negative thing I have in all of this is, why did it take so long? Even right now in the House and the Senate, why did it take this long? This is something that should have been an easy vote, and it should have been a little bit higher priority. With that said, I'm very grateful that they passed this, and I think we should all give credit where credit's due to Democrats and the Republicans who decided to pass this bill finally.
Olympia, Sammamish, Lakewood, Bellevue.
This is the Big Local on the Jason Ranch Show.
Bellingham, Kirkland, Z-Town.
Stories about you, not about Seattle.
Welcome back to the Jason Ranch Show. It's 4:30 on a weekday afternoon. Hey, that means it's time for the Big Local, brought to you by Sean Keller Smiles by Design. Wonderful sponsor. Because of their support, they let us do a segment that's actually really simple to describe. The media is hyper-focused on the city of Seattle, so they end up ignoring a lot of interesting stories happening all over the place. And so in this segment, we completely ignore the city of Seattle. Instead, we focus on the communities you live in, the communities you care about most. We've got a pair of stories out of Bellevue, because Bellevue apparently might have a gang issue. It kind of depends on what you would consider a gang issue. They just saw their first homicide a couple weeks ago. This is the first homicide they've seen in over 3 years. An 18-year-old was shot and killed at Goldsmith Park. Now, they believe that it's gang-related. Carl Kleikenecht is the assistant police chief for Bellevue Police Department. He told Como News that the situation has not yet risen to the level of a huge gang problem yet, but obviously it's of concern.
Is there a gang problem in Bellevue right now?
No. There's a gang presence. I'm pretty confident that we will be able to suppress this budding gang activity.
So budding gang activity, meaning, at least from the police's perspective, this is something we're concerned with. This is something that has the capacity to grow. That we have a gang presence just like many cities all across the country, including just right here in Washington State. When you look at cities like Burien, Federal Way, I mean, there are gang violence issues here. But right now they're like, okay, we're going to try to get ahead of this, because the truth is we've seen some significant violence in Crossroads Park. Six shootings since January 25th, though this is the first homicide. But that's their perspective. From the perspective of someone who lives in Bellevue, David Passow tells Como, hey, I walk through Crossroads Park pretty frequently, and this problem is actually getting worse. It's not getting better.
Back over here, they're at. They're back over in the corner by the golf course. I mean, literally, group fights. By the time the police get there, they're gone. But those things really add into what's happening. To change what's going on, we need to change the culture. We need to go in and help them. Because if we don't do it now, what's going to happen is things are going to keep escalating.
And I think he makes a really good point, because people think that you just throw police at the gang problem and all of a sudden it goes away. It certainly helps. And when we're talking about punishing criminals or people who are doing things that will lead to criminal behavior, yeah, there's a huge role that the police department, whether we're talking about Bellevue or Federal Way or Everett or wherever, that they play. But let's be clear about something. There is still an underlying problem to get people off of this path to becoming gang members that this Bellevue Police Department, like any other police department, they're not going to be able to solve. This is an issue that is really going to take an entire community. But when you're living in a city that you feel is dealing with a violent problem, you do want to know exactly what the police department is planning. So Chief Steve Milette of the Bellevue Police Department, he's going to be on the show in an hour. He's going to be on at 5:30 to talk about how they're trying to be proactive and to give us the latest update on this shooting that took place, this homicide from a couple weeks ago. So Bellevue Police Chief Steve Milette is going to be on the show at 5:30, which is a good reminder to those of you who do not have the app. Please download the KTTH smartphone app. Number one, it helps us on this station. The more people who download the app, the better it is for us to get exposure on the iPhone store, your Android device store. So that's good. But number two, and more importantly for you, when we have important interviews or breaking news, we'll send you an alert. So if you forget that Steve Milette or whomever is going to be on the show, we'll send you an alert. And on top of that, if you're listening to that interview on your way home, maybe you live in Renton and you're going home from your job in Everett, and then you get into the driveway at 5:35, we're 5 minutes into this interview, and you love it, but you don't want to miss it, but you can't just hang out in the car because that's weird. Well, then you can listen to the rest of the interview on the app. So text the keyword APP to 1-800-465-8770, and I'll send you a link so you can download the smartphone app either on your iPhone or your Android phone. Text the keyword app to 1-800-465-8770, or of course just go into your app store and search for the KTTH app. Just type in KTTH, you'll find it. Now, another story that's kind of local to Bellevue in that a Bellevue dad is dealing with something that no one wants to deal with, the death of a son, a death of a child. He has made it his mission to make teenagers think twice about participating in internet challenges because he lost his 15-year-old son to something called the choking game. And so he's been going to a lot of schools all across the area. He just went to LeConnor High School. And talking with King 5, the dad, Ken Torque, says, hey, I'm trying to save kids from peer pressure.
I thought we had prepared our kids for everything that we knew about. We didn't know about this one. And I take it rather personal when it comes into my house and takes my kid. It would also be very easy to crawl into a corner and die. But if you're going to move forward in life, you've got to take that step.
Totally agree. And for him, he just wants to highlight the dangers of these challenges, because when you're talking to like a 13, 14, 15, 16-year-old kid, whether we're talking about a son or a daughter, they're not always thinking truly about the consequences.
We want these kids to understand that, you know, these dangers are real and the injuries are real. The death is real. I am not going to say I did nothing. I want to say I did everything I possibly could to stop this and to make that change.
So here's the tricky part about dealing with something like this. And I don't take this perspective as a parent. I take this perspective as someone who remembers what it was like being a kid. I'm 38 years old, so I'm not that old. Don't give me that look, Tom. Not that old. But there's a tricky part here that parents have to navigate, because you don't want to get so involved that the kid will feel like you're smothering them. You do not want to become that helicopter parent, because generally that pushes kids away. But you also have to be involved enough with the culture that your kid is surrounded by, whether we're talking about the online culture, what's going on in his school or her school, because you want to be generally aware of some of these internet challenges. Now, here's the truth, and I understand the irony is in stating this while just telling you that this dad lost his 15-year-old son, who he deeply loved, to an internet challenge. But the truth is, most kids are not engaging in internet challenges. And I would argue most kids are not engaging in this, let alone dying from this, is because they have good enough relationships with sanity to know that some of this stuff is stupid. And I think as a parent, I think there is a legitimate way for you to have a good enough relationship with your kid that you can talk to them generally about what's going on the internet. And I'm glad that Ken Torque is doing this work so you can be, as parents, a little bit more aware, and these kids can be a little bit more aware. But beyond that, I think you just have to teach your kid earlier on than maybe you otherwise would about how to be a responsible human being. That you are now, we're now living in a world, and for some people, this generation, we've got a generation of kids who only know life with the internet. I mean, I remember a time when the internet was not a thing. I remember dial-up internet and the wonders of what lay ahead. But now there are a bunch of kids who, unlike their parents, only know the internet. And you have to talk with them about being smarter, being a smarter user of YouTube and Snapchat and Instagram and all these apps that you haven't even yet heard of that your kids probably have heard of. You have to start those conversations earlier than you otherwise would have been, because your kids are going to be tested earlier. I think it's a losing battle to try to keep up to date with all of the new internet challenges that they're learning about on YouTube. There's a lot of hoaxes that people pretend are internet challenges and are not. I think that there is this potential of talking and hyping up an internet challenge so much that you end up inspiring, weirdly, a kid to participate. But it's a losing battle to try to figure out all that's out there, because I have no idea. I'm 38 years old. I've never heard of some of these. I've heard of the choking game. I've not heard about half the other stuff that's out there. So you just have to focus on being as good of a parent as you can and raising as smart and as level-headed a teenager as you can. You just have to start those conversations a little bit earlier than you would have had to generations ago. And that's part of being a parent now in 2019. And so I'm glad that Ken is doing the work that he's doing, getting in front of these kids. But let's just make sure that Ken's not the only one having these conversations with the kids. You got to be having these conversations with your own kids. That's a bigger part of that. Because, yeah, they'll listen to Ken to a degree, but they're probably going to have more of a, you're probably going to have more of an influence on them. You're listening to The Jason Rand Show. Thank you so much. Really do appreciate it. We are live in the Online Trading Academy studio on this Tuesday afternoon. It's weird. Representative Eric Swalwell, the Democrat from California who's now running for president, he went from nuking citizens to literally talking about taking away guns. Democrats like to tell us, we don't want to take away your guns, and yet he's taking a position with Jake Tapper on CNN that, yeah, you're going to need to turn in your guns, maybe leave them in some sort of area, and if we have to, we'll take them.
What's the punishment for people who don't hand in their guns? Do they go to jail?
Well, Jake, they would, but I also offer an alternative, which would be to keep them at a hunting club or a shooting range. And the reason I have proposed this is because these weapons are so devastating. I've seen this as a prosecutor in the cases that I've prosecuted. We've seen these in the school shootings from Sandy Hook to Parkland, and I was just at Parkland earlier this week doing a town hall there. But it's not just the violence that they've caused. It's the fear, the immeasurable fear that our children live in because they are still on our streets. I want to get rid of that fear. I want to do what Australia did and New Zealand just recently did. I think this issue just needs some bold leadership to do it.
So what he's essentially saying is he wants to do what other countries that don't have Second Amendment rights do, which means he wants to trample on your constitutional rights. I mean, at least he's being honest about it. I mean, he's not particularly smart when he's talking about guns. In fact, you'll notice in that clip that he didn't actually answer Jake Tapper's question because it was very clear. What are you going to do? I didn't really hear any significant concrete plan on what he's going to do, but it does sound like he's saying, yeah, we're taking away your guns.
On this issue from President Trump and the Republicans is that Democrats want to take away your guns. But isn't it fair to say you actually do want to take away people's guns?
You know, keep your pistols, keep your long rifles, keep your shotguns. I want the most dangerous weapons, these weapons of war, out of the hands of the most dangerous people. But
thank you. Oh, thank you so much, Eric. Congressman Swalwell, I can call you Eric, right? We get along. Thank you so much for giving me permission on what guns I can hang on to. I really appreciate that. I mean, I wasn't asking for your approval. I really don't care what you think about this, but I really do appreciate you giving it to me. Why is it that the people who seem to know the least about guns get the best coverage? So right there, and I don't pretend to be someone who has a high level of knowledge on guns, but I do know some things. So when I hear something like this,
you know, keep your pistols, keep your long rifles, keep your shotguns. I want the most dangerous weapons, these weapons of war.
Weapons of war are not sold in this country. Weapons of war are not being used to commit crimes in this country. An AR-15 is not a weapon of war. Semi-automatic weapons, not weapons of war. Use what you think is a weapon of war actually in a war, and you're going to find out very quickly that they don't operate the way you think they are, that they will. Okay? And yet when he makes a comment like this, and I hear this all the time on TV, usually to reporters or journalists who either don't know much about guns at all or hold the same exact position, I never hear significant pushback. I never hear it. If he thinks we're currently selling weapons of war, he doesn't know what guns are currently banned and what guns are being sold. But he uses that kind of language, whether it's out of nefarious intent or because he's just ignorant, doesn't matter. The intent of what he's doing there is trying to scare people. Because most reasonable people, regardless of how they feel about the Second Amendment, if you say, should you have a weapon of war, people will be like, no, I don't think we should have weapons of war out there. And so what he's trying to do is change the narrative so you think the weapons that are being sold are weapons of war. It's the same type of people who say, well, what next? We should let you have nuclear weapons? We should let you have bazookas? I'm like, no, because those aren't guns. We're having a conversation about guns, I thought. It's just dishonest.
Out of the hands of the most dangerous people. But when it comes to what else we can do, because I don't even suggest this is all we can do, I also want background checks. So do 73% of NRA members.
Yeah, we've got background checks right now.
Can confirm.
Yeah, we've literally got background checks right now. Now, you're pretending that we don't because he wants to talk about this little loophole that doesn't actually exist. We've got universal background checks right now in Washington State, for example.
I want to invest in gang violence prevention programs, especially in our cities. I want more community-oriented policing. My brother is a Sheriff's Athletic League police officer. He works in tough neighborhoods and helps them, you know, get kids out of the streets and into sports. There's a lot that we could do on this issue, but unless it's the number one issue for a president, it's just going to be one that we respond to shooting to shooting. I want to lead on it.
No one wants you to lead on it. No one wants you to lead on it, including people who really take this issue seriously, including people who maybe have a litmus test on who they're going to support. They don't want you, Eric Swalwell, to lead on this issue. I've not heard a single person who have said any who said anything about Eric Swalwell. He might be worse off than Jay Inslee, and Jay Inslee right now has 0%, so I'm not exactly sure you can get any lower. If there is, it's probably Eric Swalwell, who is a dishonest character. He's a bad politician. He's not someone that we should trust because he's been going after the president ad nauseum, claiming that there's Russian collusion when there actually wasn't any. And then all of a sudden, he wants to redefine his brand. His brand has been Russian collusion, Russian collusion, Russian collusion. And now he's trying to shape his brand as the anti-gun guy. The anti-gun guy is actually waiting. My sense is they've got a plan right now. I guarantee you they have a plan at this campaign, in this movement. Eric Swalwell has a plan waiting for some sort of gun violence that they can jump on and exploit so he can get a leg up on the competition when it comes to earning the candidacy from the Democratic Party. In a weird way, I think he wants a shooting of some kind so he can bring some sort of highlight to his campaign, because in his mind, not because he's a bad person, wants to see people dead, but he thinks this is inevitable, that it's going to happen. So if it's going to happen, it might as well happen under my campaign so I can take advantage of it. It's kind of twisted. It's the Jason Rant Show.